From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Happy New Year to those of you in the Central and Eastern time zones, those of you in Mountain and Pacific. You'll have your moment in a couple hours. Later tonight, 2019 predictions, open lines from you, and then later on we'll also open up the 2018 prediction vault and go through some predictions that many of us talked about, and some of them spot on, a few of them. Well, they haven't happened yet. Here's what's happening now. The origins of a suspected computer attack that disrupted the Los Angeles Times and the Tribune publishing newspapers around the country remain unclear after causing delivery delays and being brought to the attention of federal investigators now. The San Diego Union-Tribune publisher Jeff Light described the incident as what now seems to have been a malicious attack on the company by computer hackers in a message posted to the newspaper's website. Why would they do this and who would do it? Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the Internet. What's going on here, Lauren? What do you think?
Well, first, Happy New Year, George.
Thank you. You too.
To everyone, let's hope that 2019 is great for everybody. There is so little information that is being released about this, virtually nothing. I've kind of scoured around that it's really impossible to make any kind of intelligent assessment of this. It does appear that it was restricted, reportedly at least, to the Tribune publishing systems. So that doesn't just include newspapers owned by Tribune. It also can include newspapers that use Tribune assets, printing facilities, things like that. So it did have a fairly broad reach. The thing is, it's really hard to know in these situations without a lot more information whether you're looking at something that's genuinely targeted or something that's opportunistic. And I heard, for example, I heard some people saying, well, it apparently originated outside the U.S., and I don't really know how that kind of assessment could be made yet either, because as we know, it takes a lot of work and a lot of time to figure out where these attacks are actually coming from, and sometimes you never really know. And while what I'm about to say doesn't necessarily apply to this particular case, there's sometimes a situations where malware spreads within a company due to an internal error, sometimes by the IT department. You know, it would be the most logical kind of way that could happen. And then when you get into that kind of situation, blaming outside sources becomes convenient. Again, I'm not saying that that's what's happened here.
Okay.
I think what the bottom line is, we don't really know. So other than we know that the presses didn't press and there were a lot of late newspapers, beyond that, we'll have to see if more detailed information is ever really released to the public.
If it was a hack, Lauren, by some international group, I mean, what do you think they were after?
Well,
or is it a test?
Sort of the question, isn't it? I mean, why? I mean, what do you? Okay, so you've stopped the publication.
Stopped the presses for a little bit.
Newspapers. Okay, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that would have been a whole different kind of impact than it is now. So that's kind of why, when I first heard about this, I say, boy, if you were really going to attack, you'd go for the online systems, right? I mean, that would have the most, you have global reach then, because you have people accessing many of these newspapers, websites globally. So just going after the presses, I don't know. We just don't have enough information, and speculation is cheap.
Lauren, we'll talk to you next year.
Thank you.
U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, a liberal firebrand who has taken on Wall Street and traded barbs with President Donald Trump, became now the most prominent Democrat to announce a challenge to the Republican president in 2020. There will be more. Well, last week, Craig Hewlett, our guest, predicted this, and it seems like it's come to pass. President Donald Trump has appeared to now water down plans for an immediate pullout of the 2,000 U.S. ground troops in Syria, even as he defiantly claimed that his achievements in the conflict should make him a national hero. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Happy New Year to you, John, and your family.
Yeah, thanks, George. Yeah, thank you very much, you too, and the audience, too.
What do you think of the slow slowdown? Looks like he's finally listening to some of his advisors, or what?
Well, I think he met with Lindsey Graham today at the White House, and Graham is a big backer to keep those 20,000 advisors in there. But part of the reason why, you know, Trump really ran on a campaign to kind of end, you know, sort of U.S. involvement in these useless Middle East conflicts that are so complex and, you know, have so many moving parts to them. And when you're looking at, you know, Syria, you're looking at, you know, the Turks have an issue with the Kurds. The Kurds have an issue with the Syrians. It's the Russians have an issue with just about everybody that gets in their way. So, you know, Trump decided, hey, you know, we have no business there anymore. But here's what Lindsey Graham told Trump today. He says, look, this really isn't about, you know, what you've been hearing in the news about there's going to be a massacre with the Kurds. That really isn't the main issue, or somehow, you know, that there's going to be some catastrophe over there. They're really looking at, you know, the influence of Iran over there and having some kind of a stable U.S. force there, at least, you know, advisors, mm-hmm. Counters Iranian ambitions in order to set up some kind of military bases. You know, Al-Qaeda and ISIS are pretty well contained. I mean, while it's not true that, you know, they've been completely destroyed because there are thousands of ISIS fighters scattered in the Syrian desert right now, it's also not true that if they withdraw these troops, they're going to somehow reconstitute themselves and dominate the region. Today, Bashar Assad gave the green light to the Iraqis, basically, to bomb anything related to ISIS over there, and they're fully equipped with U.S. F-16s. So this is not about ISIS. It's not about the Kurds. The Bashar Assad, the Syrian president that they've been trying to destroy for the last 7 years, almost 8 years right now, has just told the Kurds that he will protect them against any onslaught from the Turks. So there's no worry any longer that the Kurds are going to, you know, somehow going to be facing a massacre over there. And I think Lindsey Graham's position with Trump was, hey, you may be jeopardizing Israel if you prematurely end, you know, the U.S. advisors in Syria. So let's keep them there a while longer. And I think he agreed to do that.
And, John, are we trapped between a rock and a hard place with Afghanistan and Iraq? Because if we pull out at this point, and I'm disappointed we're there in the first place, but if we pull out, don't they collapse now too?
No question about that, especially in Afghanistan, where the Taliban has a very organized insurgency there. And without U.S. presence in Afghanistan, the central government there would completely collapse. The same thing, really, if you really are honest about the Iraqi military, they really have clay feet, as they call it, and they can be basically conquered very quickly. So I think the U.S. is stuck in Iraq, and we're stuck in Afghanistan.
Yep.
And to some extent now, I think we're embedded in Syria for the time being.
Good point. John, thank you. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. Netflix seems to be flying high over the reception to its just-released psychological horror film, Bird Box, that it's breaking a long-held tradition of staying largely away from telling us their viewership. The streaming service said that more than 45 million-plus accounts have watched the Sandra Bullock-led film in its first week of release. That's pretty darn good. NASA making a historic New Year's Day flyby of the mysterious Ultima Thule, that strange object out there in the Kuiper Belt. But there's more in space. Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Say, Stephen, Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you, George, and all the listeners of this great radio show. Hey, I wanted to comment a little further as we talk on New Year's Eve. The Ultima Thule object, which the New Horizons spacecraft, as we know, probably came closest to around 12:33 a.m. this morning, Eastern Standard Time. But what's interesting, George, is we probably won't get to see these images. Hopefully they'll be spectacular, as NASA hopes and all of us do, for at least a day or so. It takes about 6 hours for those images, once they're taken, to even get back to the Earth. That's how far this strange object in the Kuiper Belt, as you mentioned, Ultima Thule, the object itself may be about 20 miles wide and may have a cluster of small satellites around it. Another quick update, George, as we move into the new year, the Chinese with the Chang'e 4, they probably will take and make the attempt to land that particular spacecraft on the far side of the moon as early as January the 3rd. Stay tuned. But, George, in the live sky, this is so spectacular. We open up 2019 with one of the best meteor showers of the year. Yes, folks, it's called the Quadratus, a little-known region of the sky, an old constellation that doesn't exist. But here's how you might be able to see it. If you have clear skies, look into the northeast sky from around 3 a.m. till sunrise on the mornings of the 4th and the 5th, probably best on January the 4th. And, George, as we move into 2019, of course, you know this, the listeners are excited to hear more. We'll be counting down the great total lunar eclipse that occurs on January the 20th, an amazing way for us here in America and North America to get to see one of nature's grand sights, sometimes referred to as a blood moon. I'm reporting live from the rooftop of a great place, George. It's the Talking Stick Resort, where we're now going to join and rejoin our friends in a great New Year's Eve celebration. Happy New Year, George, and thank you for having me part of this great show. Look forward to being with you, as Dr. Sky reminds everyone in 2019 now. Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies and email me at drsky@cox.net.
Have a great, safe bash up there, Stephen, on top of the roof. As I mentioned, later on tonight, we'll be taking your prediction open lines for 2019. We'll be opening up the vault for 2018, going through some of the things that you told us earlier in the year. Up next, an expert on prophecy, John Hogue, joins us for a couple hours. Get ready for what he has to say next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. My pleasure to introduce one of our dear friends and favorite guests, John Hogue. By the way, on March 23rd, John will be one of our special live guests at the Historic Everett Theater for our live event. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the program. John Hogue, of course, writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He is considered the world authority in Nostradamus, a best-selling author as well. One of his books includes Beyond Alt-Right, Alt-Left, A Community of Americans, Trump Strikes Syria and Korea with a question mark, and so much more. John, Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year, George.
I'm looking forward to seeing you again in Everett, Washington. That's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. That's quite a great opera house, and we had it packed back on the 31st of July in 2017.
Well, it looks like we're doing the same thing. I mean, they're pacing at a record setting, they tell us. So people are going to come and see John Hogue live and in person.
Yes, and, you know, it's also it's great to finally meet Peter Davenport and watch him talk. He's one of the greatest UFO guys out there, a really solid investigative reporter. So it's I feel so honored to be in the group that you have picked this time around.
Great people. We'll talk a little bit about that later. So the story tonight is the president, of course, is considering and has decided to slow down on removing 2,000 U.S. ground forces from Syria. What's your take on that, John? Because you've got a little futuristic outlook in 2019 about that.
Oh, yes. It's not surprising. It is actually an old pattern that has happened where President Trump and his campaign makes promises to end a lot of the ruinous wars, and then he moves on it, or he wants to make friends with Russia, and then suddenly something happens. For instance, just an example, when he was talking to Putin the first time in the Oval Office, within a half day after that, after 2 years of the Minsk II agreements not seeing any fighting in Ukraine, Poroshenko, president of Ukraine, starts lobbing shells into Russian Ukrainian cities. You see it again when the president is very positive and upbeat about his meeting with Xi of China, and then Bolton, who knew about it and didn't tell him, following day, the Huawei CEO, one of the main people, is indicted and is going to be extradited to America. There is, in this man, a man who really wants to drain the swamp in Washington. But because, since I've looked at his astrology in my book that predicted he could upset Hillary Clinton almost 10 months before the election,
yep.
President Trump for president astrological observations, I said in this thing that he, you know, these things that he wants to do are going to be sabotaged by the deep state, by the military-industrial complex. If you end war in Afghanistan, you end the war market there. If you work with Russia to actually fight together to destroy ISIS and other terrorists, you are going to take out the Middle Eastern war market, and you're going to end the biggest market of them all, the Cold War 2.0 market that started. We talked about it back in 2014 that this was coming. It's a business model that made $15 trillion last time it was done and made a lot of war marketeers filthy rich and squandered a lot of the public fund. The other thing I want to bring out that's very important is an anniversary that's happening in February of this new year. This is something that's probably going to be completely looked over, but I will give you all a heads up. It'll be the 30th anniversary of the expulsion, the retreat of Soviet forces out of Afghanistan. It was a significant moment that ended the Cold War and within a few short years imploded the over-endowed, overstretched Soviet military-industrial complex and ended the Soviet Union. At that time, 30 years ago, the Soviet economy, over 50% of the public fund was being put into sustaining this huge military machine. We are exactly 30 years later spending that much money, and it makes me think that USSR, drop the SR, is going to be the U.S. in the next 3 years.
Interesting. How do things look economically in 2019, John?
A new recession is coming. It's Act two of a three-act, what I call the decline and fall of the fiat monopoly funny money system that's been around since 1971. The first time in 2008, the bailout came from our own federal bank system, and that stopped it for about 11 years. What is going to start happening in the end of this new year, and definitely into 2020 and 2021, is a greater recession. And this time, that will be saved by a different kind of funny money system, the IMF, using their kind of international electronic currencies. But rather than 11 years of sustaining the patient, I would think within 11 months, you will then see in 2021 a collapse of the fiat economy as we know it. And the reason that the marker to watch out for is the fact, and you won't hear this a lot on your mainstream news, is that the world now in the last 5 years has dropped using the U.S. Currency as the reserve currency in 33% of all transactions in the world. And it is rapidly increasing. And in the next few years, it will probably be 50%. And when that happens, the U.S. dollar, which has been weaponized in the last three presidencies to a greater extent than ever before, people are fighting back. People are reacting outside of this country, and it's corporately filtering news. And you're not hearing this story that the U.S. dollar is the Achilles heel of the military industrial empire of the United States. And when it suddenly is going into a rapid inflationary spiral because it's losing its value, the $1.2 trillion that's being used to sustain a homeland security, military, industrial, and Pentagon complex will be equivalent to having to spend $3 trillion just to sustain it. It is literally a busting of the bank and busting of this economic weapon that will cause a very rapid potential decline and fall of our this phase of American history where we've been kind of a policeman imperium. And it will happen before the end of the roaring, before the midpoint of the roaring 2020s. I've got a book that's been delayed for 3 years, and I'm going to put it out soon, hopefully in the spring. It's going to look at the things that happened in 2019, the decisions that are made by leaders around the world that will plunge us into a decade of crisis and breakthroughs that will literally be the most significant and most dangerous and most transformatory decade in human history.
Oh, my gosh. Stay with us, John. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that in a second. John Hogue with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take calls with John next hour as well. Well, welcome back to our predictions program, our New Year's Eve special for you. We will be live on New Year's night as well with another great show, too. A number of predictions from astrologers and psychics joining us. So make sure you're part of the program indeed. Well, a couple things. Lex, our webmaster, and our news editor, Tim Banal, have put together a 2018 roundup of incredible stories. They're in the carousel reel at coasttocoastam.com. When you get a moment, take a look. The number two item in the carousel reel, the trials and tribulations of time travelers. One of the most unexpected developments last year in 2018 was a stream of alleged whistleblowing time travelers that emerged over the course of the year. It was a verifiable calculate of unquestionable individuals claiming to have arrived from the future with profound revelations to share the world. It began with a strange story about a young man who saw something that he filmed about a man who was from the year 6000. But we've got that in item two at the carousel reel. Throughout the night, I'll be telling you some of the other items, but definitely go up there and take a look. So our live stage shows, as John Hogue and I were talking about, he is one of our guests who will be live with us on Saturday, March 23rd in Everett, Washington. I need 20 of you to get tickets today to hit a certain milestone. This, folks, is a huge, gorgeous theater, the Everett Theater. I just need 20 of you today to go get your tickets. How do you do that? Go to coasttocoastam.com, click events at the top of the homepage, or in the carousel reel. We've got that revolving where you can click it. It'll take you straight to the Everett Theater and order your tickets that way. If you don't have a computer, do not worry. Here's a number for you to call the Everett Theater, 425-258-6766. That's 425-258-6766. Now, those of you in the Midwest, over in Columbus, Ohio, Saturday, May 11th at the Lincoln Theater, our live stage show. We're going to be all over the country in 2019. Looking forward to these. One of our special guests will be the father of ufology, Stanton Friedman, who was my very first radio interview when I was 21 years old. So come on out to this event. Get your tickets the same way. Events at coasttocoastam.com or in the carousel reel. Or here's a phone number for the Lincoln Theater's Kappa Ticket Center, 614-469-0939. That's 614-469-0939. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're with John Hogue talking about prophecy for 2019. His website, hogueprophecy.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So, John, you had this book you're sitting on for 3 years, but it's coming out, huh?
It's coming out in the spring at last. I know a lot of people have been waiting for it. It's evolved over the last 3 years into an epic book on that's not just about 2019, but the things that we do in 2019 that, and this will actually show an overview of the coming decade of the 2020s, some of the major astrological issues, milestones, as well as other things, and major trend changes in economy, in religion, in 5G, and all of that other stuff. And it's quite a book, and it's called Predictions 2019 and Into the Roaring 2020s.
Does Nostradamus write anything in his quatrains, John, that kind of give us information about 2019 and beyond?
Well, certainly there are some astrology inferences that show a complete crash of a paper money economy around 2021, that it wouldn't even be worth, the paper wouldn't even be worth the fire to burn it, is what he said. And it's interesting that he's talking about paper, because in those days there weren't promissory notes. So I'm wondering, now certainly astrology, it may be some other of time of this rare convergence, but I have not seen anything since the 1550s that correlates to this being already past, and therefore I think it's in the future. Secondly, back to Syria. Syria is the flashpoint. Syria is where Babare in Nostradamus dwells. Babare is an anagram for of or from an Arab vassal. The Arab vassals rebel against their masters, and it creates a situation where the Eagle Kings, come clashing directly. It's a potential, but it is a clear and present danger that is more dangerous because neither the press nor the leaders, especially of the West, seem to be mindful of the dangers that you and I grew up with in the first Cold War, where you just don't say and do the things people are doing today and push nuclear superpowers up against the wall without invoking the potential of a World War III nobody saw coming. And the flashpoint is Afghanistan, and the other key person in this may very well be the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, called MBS. I have been a dictator. No, I haven't been a dictator. It's been long. I've been doing psychic readings for about 9 hours right now. So it is a person who I have been a detective trying to look at all the things, all the people that could be candidates for Nostradamus' third and final Antichrist, who he calls Mabas. The first was Paul Nailoran, which is an anagram for Napoleon, which is in English King Napoleon. The second is Hister, which is the ancient name of the River Danube, where Adolf Hitler grew up, and in near Linz, Austria. And the third is called Mabus. Isn't it interesting that now we call this man, this leader of Saudi Arabia, which in a way is the source of the Wahhabist extremist religiousness that has been the faith of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, is now the first candidate who has an acronym, MBS, as his name for most of us. And all it needs is the two missing letters, A and U, to fulfill one of Nostradamus' easiest to decode anagrams and turn him into Mabus.
Interesting take. What do you think? Do you think he is?
I think of all the people I've been looking at since 1983, he is the most formidable candidate that I've ever seen. He is the difference with him, other than Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein and the others, is he's got the United States and Israel, the regional and world superpowers, watching his back. And it is another area that is in the clear in a lot of Nostradamus' prophecies, and I wrote a book about it, Nostradamus, The War with Iran, Islamic Prophecies of the Apocalypse. That book looked at all these in the clear prophecies that indicated Nostradamus was very concerned with the Persians and what would happen to them in the Arab Gulf, and in the area of Karmara, which is the ancient 16th century name of the Iranian side of the Strait of Hormuz. And he's talking about fleets being melted and sunk there. He is talking about another fleet that's got the image of the true serpent, which I have said on your show very much likely is the 13 red and yellow stripes with the rattlesnake that says, "Don't tread on me," which flies on all the Fifth Fleet ships since a year after 9/11. That connects it to the whole war on terror. And so it is probably a symbol of American fleets, and it's not clear whose fleet is sunk. As I was saying earlier about military overextension financially, another thing that happens when empires are in their final stage and they become quite militarist is that they tend to overextend their overextension into some military disaster, which rapidly declines the empire. For instance, Napoleon, he reaches out and invades Russia, and within 3 years his empire was destroyed by that military disaster. 129 years later, Adolf Hitler does the same thing, and he is gone down by invading the Soviet Union in 1941. So these major events are coming in these areas. And so everybody should watch Syria and try to watch it if you can without all the political projections of all sides coming there.
John, you know, since you've been doing this and we've been looking at predictions for years and years and years, things are always difficult and not good. When are we going to have a year where everything's just pleasant? Or is that just too blue sky?
It's too blue sky because what is happening basically is that the human existence so far has been in a fixated habit of repeating the past and calling it the future. I would contend to you and all the listeners that human beings, except for a very few awakened people, have actually seen what the future really potentially looks like, because what they're seeing instead is a projection of their habitual unconscious actions projected in the future and repeated. So we are reaching a critical mass, especially in the 2020s and 2030s, where the human race has to grow up. It has to grow up, and it only can when a collective potential of threat brings us together, like planetary climate change, like a fiat economy that can no longer sustain its game. Some nations are already seeing this coming. In China and Russia, they are stockpiling gold. And also, in this book, and even now, I'm going to show you that unlike the Great Depression of the 1930s, the Greater Depression of 2021 and so forth in the 2020s actually is giving us lifeboats, other economic models are starting to come forth. Even the crazy Wild West of Bitcoin is something that will eventually, like the Wild West, be tamed, be given something that is unique to each of us that can be somehow connected to the blockchain to do person-to-person transactions that cannot be hacked. And when that happens, literally within 5 years, banks will disappear because one person-to-person interchanges of money, communications, will ultimately, by the end of the 2020s, end a lot of the divisions that potentially end a lot of the divisions that keep us separated and identified in warring adversarial parties. So it is actually coming through the most simple thing that we do, as often great changes unexpectedly come. The simple barter between two people making a transaction could actually change everything in the next 20 years.
John, do you see any breakthroughs with science and medicine and technology in 2019?
We are within a decade of ending cancer. The situation that is happening is within a decade, there are things now where we now use stem cell research to actually reprogram our own genetics to heal ourselves. And I'm very excited about that. The other thing, too, is that by the 2030s, there is going to be breakthroughs in understanding what makes cells degenerate, not only bodily cells, but the cells that are more difficult to sustain, the brain cells. And what you will then see in the world is a slow progress of ending age, and people will live 300 years at least.
Whoa! Social Security won't like that.
Well, the thing is, these changes will, like blockchain technology, like genetic medicine, these changes, of course, will mean that certain things that hold power, like the pharmaceuticals, will disappear, like the banks will disappear. The Aquarian age is about, the Piscean age that we've just come out of in 2,000 years was about controlling and centralizing everything. The Aquarian age pulls the carpet out from under all of that control and brings control and power back to the individual. So a decentralizing of our politics, our economic systems, our power systems, our religions, I would foresee a time when religions as we know, all these Piscean faith-based religions, might disappear and be replaced by a new wing of science that will balance objective investigation into human existence with the scientist becoming aware of himself. The subjective inner investigation of meditation is probably coming to balance that out. And the difference between religions that believe the Aquarian age is about science, a religious science that experiences, that hypothesizes, and actually makes, if somebody in the future, a couple hundred years, says, how many religions are there? the answer will be how many people are alive this moment on our planet.
John, you should have become a meteorologist because you had some pretty uncanny weather predictions for 2018. What about 2019?
Well, it is a time of acceleration. I call 2019 the year, actually we've been in a few of them now. I mean, when did you hear a 26,000 person town burning up and leaving 1,000 people
never
can't even be found? When have you ever heard of a hurricane suddenly becoming a category 2 to a category 5 right as it hits the Florida panhandle and then absolutely destroys deep into Georgia? And that's 2 weeks after something hit North Carolina.
Yeah.
We are in what I've called, we have entered at last, unfortunately, things that I've been writing about since 1988. We are entering the serial disaster phase of the expanding and accelerating planetary global warming. And this year, they keep getting hotter. They keep breaking records since 2015. There is 1.5 million acres of Canadian forest that burnt. And for the fourth year in a row up here in one of the purest air regions on my island north of Seattle, we can't go out because there's as much smoke out there that's more polluted than Beijing because of these fires in Canada. They've been burning off 1.2 to 1.5 million acres a year for 5 years now. That's a whole lot of carbon. And what people don't understand is that it's not a question of quantity. I mean, I have people say this, and this is important for all of you to listen to, that I often get questions from people who say, hey, look at all the billions of tons of carbon that the existence of nature throws out in our atmosphere. How can global warming be a problem? And I said, it's not a question of quantity. It's a question of quality. If you have a scale that you keep in balance by the amount of carbon that naturally is sequestered, and if you, little humanity, add just what seems to be a little gram extra of your own man-made gases to that, you tip the scale.
And the scale has been tipped, hasn't it?
It is tipping. I'm going to, on the 23rd, review the statement I made back on the 31st of July, the last time we had this show, where I had everybody raise their hands in this vast audience. I said, how many of you people believe global warming is a hoax? And then I said that weird thing where I said, how many people in the year 2028 that are here today will understand that that was wrong and actually there is global warming? And then all the people were kind of caught in a lurch. And I am going to talk about that again, because what happened the following day of that talk we had is that was one of the times when we had 2 months in Seattle of nothing but fire smoke.
That's true. John, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get your thoughts about the 2020 candidates and who might try to challenge President Trump, what Republicans might try to challenge President Trump, if any, but Democrats for sure. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls with John Hogue in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And then after that, we go into 2 hours of prediction open lines with your calls, and then we'll pull out the vault and open it up and see what folks said about 2018.